Chapter 3. Throw a little manliness into his mood, no doubt. The project was duly executed. It was not late when he arrived at the place of outlook, only just after dusk, but a black northeast sky, accompanied by a wind from the same quarter, made the occasion dark enough. He was rewarded, but what he saw was not the lamps in rows, as he had half expected. No individual light was visible, only a halo or glow fog overarching the place against the black heavens behind it, making the light and the city seem distant, but a mile or so. He set himself to wonder on the exact point in the glow where the schoolmaster might be, who never communicated with anybody at Marygreen now, who was as if dead to them here. In the glow he seemed to see Phillotson promenading at ease, like one of the forms in Nebuchadnezzar's furnace. He had heard that breezes traveled at the rate of 10 miles an hour, and the fact now came into his mind. He parted his lips as he faced the northeast, and drew in the wind, as if it were a sweet liquor. "You," he said, addressing the breeze caressingly, "here in Christminster City between 1 and 2 hours ago, floating along the streets, pulling round the weathercocks, touching Mr. Phillotson's face, being breathed by him, and now you are here, breathed by me, you, the very same." Suddenly there came along this wind something towards him, a message from the place, from some soul residing there, it seemed. Surely it was the sound of bells, the voice of the city, faint and musical, calling to him, "We are happy here." He had become entirely lost to his bodily situation during this mental leap, and only got back to it by a rough recalling. A few yards below the brow of the hill on which he paused, a team of horses made its appearance, having reached the place by dint of half an hour's serpentine progress from the bottom of the immense declivity. They had a load of coals behind them, a fuel that could only be got into the upland by this particular route. They were accompanied by a carter, a second man, and a boy, who now kicked a large stone behind one of the wheels, and allowed the panting animals to have a long rest, while those in charge took a flagon off the load, and indulged in a drink round. They were elderly men, and had genial voices. Jude addressed them, inquiring if they had come from Christminster. "Heaven forbid, with this load," said they. "The place I mean is that one yonder." He was getting so romantically attached to Christminster that, like a young lover alluding to his mistress, he felt bashful at mentioning its name again. He pointed to the light in the sky, hardly perceptible to their older eyes. "Yes. There do seem a spot a bit brighter in the northeast than elsewhere, though I shouldn't have noticed it myself, and no doubt it med be Christminster." Here a little book of tales which Jude had tucked up under his arm, having brought them to read on his way hither before it grew dark, slipped and fell into the road. The carter eyed him while he picked it up, and straightened the leaves. "Ah, young man," he observed, "you'd have to get your head screwed on t'other way before you could read what they read there." "Why?" asked the boy. "Oh, they never look at anything that folks like we can understand," the carter continued, "by way of passing the time. On foreign tongues used in the days of the Tower of Babel, when no two families spoke alike. They read that sort of thing as fast as a night hawk will whir. 'Tis all learning there, nothing but learning, except religion. And that's learning too, for I never could understand it. Yes, 'tis a serious-minded place. Not but there's wenches in the streets o' nights. You know, I suppose, that they raise passons there like radishes in a bed? And though it do take how many years, Bob? 5 years to turn the larruping hobbledehoy chap into a solemn preaching man with no corrupt passions. They'll do it, if it can be done, and polish un off like the workmen they be, and turn un out why a long face, and a long black coat and waistcoat, and a religious collar and hat, same as they used to wear in the scriptures, so that his own mother wouldn't know un sometimes. There, 'tis their business, like anybody else's." "But how should you know? Now don't you interrupt, my boy. Never interrupt your seniors. Move the four horse aside, Bobby, here's Summit coming. You must mind that I be a talking of the college life. M lives on a lofty level, there's no gainsaying it, though I myself med not think much of em. As we be here in our bodies on this high ground, so be they in their minds noble-minded men enough, no doubt some on them able to earn hundreds by thinking out loud. And some on them be strong young fellows that can earn amist as much in silver cups. As for music, there's beautiful music everywhere in Christminster. You med be religious, or you med not, but you can't help striking in your homely note with the rest. And there's a street in the place, the main street, that and another like it in the world. I should think I did know a little about Christminster. By this time the horses had recovered breath, and bent to their collars again. Jude, throwing a last adoring look at the distant halo, turned and walked beside his remarkably well-informed friend, who had no objection to telling him as they moved on more yet of the city its towers and halls and churches. The wagon turned into a crossroad, whereupon Jude thanked the carter warmly for his information, and said he only wished he could talk half as well about Christminster as he. Well, 'tis only what has come in my way, said the carter unboastfully. I've never been there, no more than you, but I've picked up the knowledge here and there, and you be welcome to it. A-getting about the world as I do, and mixing with all classes of society, one can't help hearing of things. A friend o' mine, that used to clean the boots at the Crozier Hotel in Christminster, when he was in his prime, why, I know none as well as my own brother in his later years. Jude continued his walk homeward alone, pondering so deeply, that he forgot to feel timid. He suddenly grew older. It had been the yearning of his heart, to find something to anchor on, to cling to for some place which he could call admirable. Should he find that place in this city, if he could get there? Would it be a spot in which, without fear of farmers, or hindrance, or ridicule, he could watch and wait, and set himself to some mighty undertaking like the men of old of whom he had heard? As the halo had been to his eyes, when gazing at it a quarter of an hour earlier, so was the spot mentally to him as he pursued his dark way. It is a city of light, he said to himself. The tree of knowledge grows there, he added a few steps further on. It is a place that teachers of men spring from and go to. It is what you may call a castle, manned by scholarship and religion. After this figure he was silent a long while, till he added, it would just suit me. IV, walking somewhat slowly by reason of his concentration, the boy an ancient man in some phases of thought, much younger than his years in others, was overtaken by a light-footed pedestrian, whom, notwithstanding the gloom, he could perceive to be wearing an extraordinarily tall hat, a swallow-tailed coat, and a watch-chain that danced madly, and threw around scintillations of skylight as its owner swung along upon a pair of thin legs and noiseless boots. Jude, beginning to feel lonely, endeavored to keep up with him. Well, my man, I'm in a hurry, so you'll have to walk pretty fast, if you keep alongside of me. Do you know who I am? Yes, I think. Physician Wilbert? I'm known everywhere, I see. That comes of being a public benefactor. Wilbert was an itinerant quack doctor, well known to the rustic population, and absolutely unknown to anybody else, as he, indeed, took care to be, to avoid inconvenient investigations. Cottagers formed his only patients, and his Wessex-wide repute was among them alone. His position was humbler, and his field more obscure than those of the quacks with capital, and an organized system of advertising. He was, in fact, a survival. The distances he traversed on foot were enormous, and extended nearly the whole length and breadth of Wessex. Jude had one day seen him selling a pot of colored lard to an old woman as a certain cure for a bad leg, the woman arranging to pay a guinea, in installments of a shilling a fortnight, for the precious salve, which, according to the physician, could only be obtained from a particular animal which grazed on Mount Sinai, and was to be captured only at great risk to life and limb. Jude, though he already had his doubts about this gentleman's medicines, felt him to be unquestionably a traveled personage, and one who might be a trustworthy source of information on matters not strictly professional. I suppose you've been to Christminster, physician? I have many times, replied the long thin man. That's one of my centers. It's a wonderful city for scholarship and religion. You'd say so, my boy, if you'd seen it. Why, the very sons of the old women who do the washing of the colleges can talk in Latin, not good Latin, that I admit, as a critic. Dog Latin, cat Latin, as we used to call it in my undergraduate days. And Greek? Well, that's more for the men who are in training for bishops, that they may be able to read the New Testament in the original. I want to learn Latin and Greek myself. A lofty desire. You must get a grammar of each tongue. I mean to go to Christminster someday. Whenever you do, you say that physician Wilbert is the only proprietor of those celebrated pills that infallibly cure all disorders of the alimentary system, as well as asthma and shortness of breath. 2 and 3 pence a box, specially licensed by the government stamp. Can you get me the grammars, if I promise to say it hereabout? I'll sell you mine with pleasure, those I used as a student. Oh, thank you, sir, said Jude gratefully, but in gasps, for the amazing speed of the physician's walk kept him in a dog trot which was giving him a stitch in the side. I think you'd better drop behind, my young man. Now I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll get you the grammars, and give you a first lesson, if you'll remember, at every house in the village, to recommend physician Wilbert's golden ointment, life drops, and female pills. Where will you be with the grammars? I shall be passing here this day fortnight at precisely this hour of 5:20 past 7. My movements are as truly timed as those of the planets in their courses. Here I'll be to meet you, said Jude. With orders for my medicines? Yes, physician. Jude then dropped behind, waited a few minutes to recover breath, and went home with a consciousness of having struck a blow for Christminster. Through the intervening fortnight he ran about, and smiled outwardly at his inward thoughts, as if they were people meeting and nodding to him, smiled with that singularly beautiful radiation which is seen to spread on young faces at the inception of some glorious idea, as if a supernatural lamp were held inside their transparent natures, giving rise to the flattering fancy that heaven lies about them then. He honestly performed his promise to the man of many cures, in whom he now sincerely believed, walking miles hither and thither among the surrounding hamlets as the physician's agent in advance. On the evening appointed he stood motionless on the plateau, at the place where he had parted from Wilbert, and there awaited his approach. The road physician was fairly up to time, but, to the surprise of Jude on striking into his pace, which the pedestrian did not diminish by a single unit of force, the latter seemed hardly to recognize his young companion, though with the lapse of the fortnight the evenings had grown light. Jude thought it might perhaps be owing to his wearing another hat, and he saluted the physician with dignity. Well, my boy, said the latter abstractedly. I've come, said Jude. You? Who are you? Oh yes, to be sure. Got any orders, lad? Yes. And Jude told him the names and addresses of the cottagers who were willing to test the virtues of the world-renowned pills and salve. The quack mentally registered these with great care. And the Latin and Greek grammars? Jude's voice trembled with anxiety. What about them? You were to bring me yours, that you used before you took your degree. Ah, yes, yes. Forgot all about it all. So many lives depending on my attention, you see, my man, that I can't give so much thought as I would like to other things. Jude controlled himself sufficiently long to make sure of the truth, and he repeated, in a voice of dry misery, you haven't brought them. No. But you must get me some more orders from sick people, and I'll bring the grammars next time. Jude dropped behind. He was an unsophisticated boy, but the gift of sudden insight which is sometimes vouchsafed to children showed him all at once what shoddy humanity the quack was made of. There was to be no intellectual light from his source. The leaves dropped from his imaginary crown of laurel. He turned to a gate, leant against it, and cried bitterly. The disappointment was followed by an interval of blankness. He might, perhaps, have obtained grammars from Alfredston, but to do that required money, and a knowledge of what books to order, and though physically comfortable, he was in such absolute dependence, as to be without a farthing of his own. At this date Mr. Phillotson sent for his pianoforte, and it gave Jude a lead. Why should he not write to the schoolmaster, and ask him to be so kind, as to get him the grammars in Christminster? He might slip a letter inside the case of the instrument, and it would be sure to reach the desired eyes. Why not ask him to send any old second-hand copies, which would have the charm of being mellowed by the university atmosphere? Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.